So our goal in life, we think about what we're trying to accomplish, which is, of course, a very big question. Not something we always want to tackle on a Sunday morning at 9 o'clock. But Rav Soloveitchik, Rabbi Joseph E. Soloveitchik, he tells us in an essay that what is the most important thing in life? He says he learned from his mother that the most important thing in life is to feel the presence of the Almighty and the gentle pressure of His hand resting upon my frail shoulders. That's what he says. That's what he says. So that is a very tall task. And to accomplish that, which is a life's work, of course, we have a system that is meant to scaffold and aid us in that process. And that's called halacha. The halacha offers us an opportunity to maintain that ongoing awareness of Hashem in our lives through a myriad of different practices and regulations and guidelines that govern all aspects of life. And they keep us, in an ideal way, in an ideal world, they keep us conscious of HaKadosh Baruch Hu on an ongoing basis. So navigating a life that is committed to halacha is crucial for accomplishing our spiritual goal. But the challenge is, so how do we do that when there are so many aspects of our lives and life is very complicated? So we're thinking, well, there are aspects of our life that are interpersonal, so there are halachos that have to be relevant to interpersonal life. There are, I guess you would call them self-care halachas that relate to how we take care of ourselves. There are all kinds of aspects of our lives, and halacha has something to say about everything. You know, commercial transactions, you name it, everything. So how are we gonna go about doing that? Well, so we're going to have to study. But the challenge is that the Shas is 2,711 double-sided pages. It's enormous. And so how do we access and navigate a world of halacha when it's so overwhelming? There's so much to learn. Where do you start to bring the halacha into your life? So there have been many attempts, and this is what we're going to focus on this morning, on one attempt, to take the entire world of halacha and streamline it for us, to make it accessible, that we can live it practically. Because otherwise, it feels like it is a lifetime of learning, and then some. I can tell you from personal experience, it's and then some. But there's got to be a way to take all of the learning that is out there, at least for a practical level, and make it accessible for the regular person, for the average, ordinary person to lead a proper, divinely inspired life. So this morning, we're going to focus on one of the most significant developments in history in accomplishing that goal. And the story starts in 1522 in Adrianople, or it's now today it's called Edirne or Edirne, something like that, in Turkey, where a 20-year project, 20 years, which is pretty amazing because that's a very, very significant amount of someone's life, a 20-year project was started with the express goal of focusing on this. And that's what we're going to explore. How do we navigate and how do we learn and how do we apply the system of halacha in our lives? So to get to this point of 1522, we need to back up. Let's start in 1488. In 1488, there was a Rav. His name was Rav Ephraim. And he had a son whose name was, at that time, his parents probably called him Yossi or Yossala, but they were Svartik, so I don't know what they called Yosef when he was a kid. Any ideas? What would they call him? Jose? No, probably not Jose, right? Yosef! They called him Yossel. In 1488, his father's name was Rav Ephraim Caro, and his name was Yosef Caro. Now, it's interesting, just already, there is some debate, where was this boy, this family living in 1488? They were living on the Iberian Peninsula, so you know what's going to happen to them very shortly. So now, some associate the youth of Rabbi Yosef Karo with the Spanish expulsion, which is actually, according to many scholars, especially a very interesting article that was published in the late 80s by a man by the name of Avraham David. He was probably not born in Spain. He was probably born in Portugal. Now, it happens to be that there were many Jews in Portugal in the 1490s because of the Jews that had been expelled from Spain. But then his life takes a turn also, because the Jews of Portugal were not expelled in 1492. So there is a very interesting book, just for reference. There was a Murano living in the 16th century. His name was Samuel Usque. I don't know if that's the right way to pronounce it. He wrote a book in Portuguese that I'm holding in front of you called The Consolation for the Tribulations of Israel. It's a narrative. It's a conversation between three people, talking to each other about the Jewish history and the Jewish destiny. And as part of that, these three Baranos, it's a story, they're sitting around talking about, it's been really rough. And a part of the book, there's a section of the book where they describe all of the tribulations that happened from the beginning of Jewish history until their time. One section, Portugal, the year 1497. So until this time, Rabbi Yosef Karo and his father, Rabbi Ephraim, they're living in Portugal. It's not the best of times, but it's not the worst of times. The king of Portugal at that time was King John. When he dies, I want to read the section.
I thought it was a marriage.
I don't think so. Yeah, this Portugal is separate. Here it is. All Jews in his kingdom must become Christians or leave Portugal within a stipulated period. If they did not leave and they were still found practicing Judaism, they would be allowed to remain, but their estates would be confiscated. So the Jews were very broken. And when the king realized the Jews resolved, he revealed his evil intent. Now, this is a very important episode. This starts at the end of December of 1496, and it carries into 1497. He commanded all Jews in the kingdom to assemble in Lisbon, bruiting them that he would provide them with ships and expel them. But as soon as he had gathered them, he had herded them into a large building called Os Estaios. And when he had corralled them like sheep for the slaughter, he exposed his venomous character and announced that they were all to become Christian. So Jews refused. The king consulted his advisors. They separated young people from older people. I find it hard to describe to you the grief expressed by young and old alike and their fathers and mothers' screams and groans, which could have cleaved rocks and moved tigers to pity. So they took the young people and then they started to give them a schmooze to try to convince them to convert to Christianity. But they did not budge. Finding the children as irresolute as their parents, the agents of my temptation attacked them furiously, dragging some by their legs and arms and others by their hair and beards. They carried forcibly into the churches where they threw their baptismal water upon them. It touched some of them but barely reached others. They imposed on them Christian names and placed them in the custody of old Christians who were now, of course, that's the new Christians are the conversos. Many of them were not Christian at all. They were just forced into Christianity. And they were told that their children had already converted to Christianity, which they didn't, but of course was a ruse. And even this was insufficient, so they started starving them and using violence, all kinds of, it's on and on. It's horrible. So this is 1497. So from this, it's most likely not from the Spanish expulsion, but from this episode of anti-Jewish persecution in Portugal in 1497, this is what was likely that caused the Caro family to leave Portugal. So where did they go? Well, they traveled to Greece, to the Balkans, to Egypt for a period of time. And in 1509, we know that they had arrived in Egypt. And there is a very interesting, a whole other interesting aspect of this, of how they can prove when Rav Yosef Caro was in a particular time. Because let's say if you were to open up a Geniza, so a lot of things in a Geniza are interesting from a historical standpoint, even though they don't have any halachic value. So let's say there was a transaction document that was found in a Geniza. A Geniza is a shemus for old documents. So they had, let's say, a receipt. They had a receipt. And it says, Beryl lent Shmerel $50. And who are the witnesses? One of them is either Rav Ephraim Caro or Rav Yosef Caro. So then you can start pinpointing exactly when the date was and where he was. So in 1509... he's in Egypt. He's there for at least 10 years. At least 10 years. There, he studies under a very influential, very important person who we know in the world of halacha as the Mahari Beirav, Rav Yaakov Beirav. Mahari Beirav later is going to settle in Tzfat, which we're going to get to in a little bit. But at this time, Rav Yosef Caro is living in Egypt, and that's probably where he learns from Mahari Beirav. In 1522, he leaves, or a little before that, 1520, 1521, 1522, he settles in Turkey, and this is where he starts the project that we're focusing on today, and that's called Beis Yosef, literally translated as the House of Joseph. His name is Yosef, and he's going to deliver us this vision of a halachic compendium. Great. Did you think I was going to say Beis Yosef when I said halachic compendium of how to live your life? Well, the truth is, you were probably thinking we were going to say Rav Yosef Caro and
Shulchan Aruch.
But the truth is that the Shulchan Aruch is just the conclusion, it's just the summary of the Beis Yosef, which is why I think, I don't know, I didn't take a survey. We could take a survey when you meet your friends and family. How is Rav Yosef Caro usually referred to? He's, as a person, we oftentimes refer to people by the names of their Sfarim. So let's say there was a man, his name was Rav Aryeh Leib HaKohen Heller, who wrote a book called the Ketzos HaChoshen. So no one calls him Rav Aryeh Leib, everybody calls him the Ketzos. So if you were to refer to Rav Yosef Caro, I think if you took a survey, most people refer to Rav Yosef Caro as the Beis Yosef, not as the Shulchan Aruch. They refer to him as the Beis Yosef. This was his life's work. This was his magnum opus. The Shulchan Aruch was the conclusion and the culmination of that, and that was the condensed version. But really, his vision was the Beis Yosef. So that's the, I guess, the first Kiddush, that growing up, we always thought Rav Yosef Caro, that's the Shulchan Aruch, but it's not. Rav Yosef Caro is really the Beis Yosef. So the Beis Yosef is going to lead into the concise small volume that we'll call the Shulchan Aruch. But it's really, this was his bias. This was his life's work that's going to take him 20 years. In addition to writing the Beis Yosef and then the Shulchan Aruch, he also wrote many responsa. Some of them are collected in a selection called the Shilos and Tshuvas Avkas Rochel. Rochel is a peddler. So the spice of the peddler. So he's answering questions from all over the world. And he also has a very important work on the Rambam that he writes at the end of his life called the Kesef Mishnah, which is a super commentary on the Rambam. He also has another work called Magid Meisharim because he had a spiritual angel who would appear to him and teach him Torah, which is a whole other aspect of his life because he was a profound Kabbalist. So he publishes the different insights that he had from this angel who came to meet with him in the Sefer Magid Meisharim, the teacher of the straight, that was the title of this experience. So all of those things are background and lend us some fuller picture to what the Beis Yosef was about. So what you have in your packet here is the introduction to the Beis Yosef. Now the Beis Yosef, as many of you know, is not a standalone sefer. What is the Beis Yosef? It is the commentary. It's a huge monumental work, but it is a commentary to another work. And he's going to explain that. What's that?
The tour.
Exactly, the tour. What we call the tour, it literally means the Arba Turim, the four columns. That's probably the best. The four pillars. Columns, the four pillars. The four pillars. So who is the tour? Because he put this commentary on the tour. It's important to know who that was. So the tour, the Arba Turim, was authored by Rabbi Yaakov ben Asher, who dies, we think, around the year 1340. He was the son of one of the most important, prominent Rabbanim, what we could call Chachmei Ashkenaz, the German rabbinic family. His name was Rabbeinu Asher ben Yechiel. He was one of the tail end of the period of the Baalei HaTosfos. His Rebbe Muvak, his primary teacher, was Maharam of Rothenburg. Maharam of Rothenburg is probably the last of the greatest Baalei HaTosfos. He was taken, as many of you know, Maharam of Rothenburg had a terrible end of his life. He was ratted out by a mole when he was trying to get away from Germany, and he was in France, so he was turned in, and they had him imprisoned in the late 13th century for 7 years. He refused to be ransomed because he didn't want them to make this a habit of imprisoning rabbis. He died in prison, and his body remained unransomed for 7 years until a Jew by the name of Alexander Wimfen paid the ransom. So when this happened, his primary student, Rabbeinu Asher ben Yechiel, the Rosh, says, I got to get out of Dodge because they took the Maharam. They're going to get, you know, they're going to get the next rabbis, because this was just, if you're ever looking for a good fundraising tool, which was popular among Arab hijackers in the 1970s, this is a good one. Find the best, the most important rabbis. This is what happened to Rav Yitzchak Kuttner. I don't know if they knew that Rav Kuttner was on the plane when he was hijacked. Some of you know that Rav Yitzchak Kuttner was hijacked by a group of terrorists in the 1970s, and there were many, many Chaim Berlin Balabatim in New York who were ready to write big checks. This is an old practice, taking rabbis hostage. Anyway, it's not. I'm not saying it's a good idea. As somebody who could be the subject of, such, God forbid, you know what I'm saying. Just, I'm saying it's happened. Anyway, so the Rosh has to leave. So he runs away from Germany and he lands in Spain, where he becomes, of course, a very significant Talmud Chacham. And his son, Rabbi Yaakov ben Asher, he collates the Rosh's works, and he writes what's called the Sefer HaRamazim, his father's basic principles of what he was teaching. He also writes a Pirush on Chumash. Some of you are familiar. It's called the Baal HaTurim. The Baal HaTurim wrote a commentary on the Chumash. But he says, look, you know, we have a lot of laws, and we got to find a way to organize these laws. So why don't we organize them according to the style of living, different aspects of life? So we're going to take daily living. We're going to put that in one section. Then we're going to talk about mitzvos and iser v'heter, you could call them, practical guidelines. Then we could take commercial requirements and then matrimonial law. And let's make them four pillars, and we'll organize them, all the laws, under each of those sections. Now, we're not going to include the laws of the Beis HaMikdash, because those are not practical, even though last time we studied the introduction of the Chafetz Chaim's Lukuti Halachos, which is very important. We're going to learn Kachim, but that's not practical. People are not being Makdash B'Zman HaZeh. You should not. If you had any ideas, don't do it. Taharos is also not in there. We don't observe the laws of Tumah and Tahara for that purpose. So he says that's going to be the four-section code. So he writes this in the beginning of the 14th century. And this became incredibly popular. And you can understand why. There were many, many manuscripts that were... There's an article in... Let's do the math. 1988, which was the 500th anniversary of the birth of Rabbi Yosef Karo, there was a volume of essays that were devoted to the life and the works of Rav Yosef Karo. So one of them is this man, Meir Benayahu, who is a tremendous Beis Yosef scholar in Israel. So he quotes in this article so many. He gives you each of the kisveyad of the tour. There were tons. He says, you learn from this kisveyad just how widespread it was. Because people were probably thinking, this is really amazing. And what's unique about this, let's say in contrast to the Rambam is only writing with the perspective of the Sephardic tradition. The tour, remember, where was his father living?
Ashkenaz.
Both in Ashkenaz and in Sfarad. And he also quotes multiple opinions. So he's condensing everything, he's organizing it, and he's leaving out all the things in the Rambam that nobody wants to devote their time to because nobody has time to learn all of those halachos. So he's just going to drill it down to these four columns, these four pillars.
He tells you where he gets it from.
He also tells you where he gets it from, which was a big complaint against the Rambam. Yeah. It's limited. It's very limited in scope. Yeah. If you look at the Torah, it's very narrow. And this also then generates commentaries on the Torah. And sometimes you'll see later Achronim who are quoting, let's say, the Mahari Abuav or the Maharam al-Shakar, Rav Moshe al-Shakar, or the Mahari Bei Rav. All these people are 15th century, 16th century Chachamim, who are writing commentaries on the Torah, because this becomes the book. Remember, think back to a time where there wasn't a Shulchan Aruch. So the Torah was your go-to place. So here we are now in 1522. Sir Yosef Karo, he has to make a decision. He wants to write a compendium of law that is going to be more comprehensive than the Torah, but he doesn't want it to be a standalone book because he doesn't want to repeat something that people have already done. The Rambam already did it and the Torah already did it. So he says, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to write the Beis Yosef and I'm going to append it to the Torah. That was his decision. So that brings us now to this volume that he starts working on in 1522, and he finishes in 1542 when he is living in, anybody know where Yosef Karo lived most famously? What's that? I heard a rumble. That's right, Tzvat. Exactly. And this becomes the touchstone of the Jewish community, not just in Israel, but worldwide. There were many Jews who were living in Yerushalayim. There was actually some tension over a controversy, which we'll talk about in a second. But Rav Yosef Karo arrives in 1536 in Tzvat, and that is the place to be. Because not only is he a great Talmudic scholar, he's a great Gaon, but he's also a great Kabbalist. So many of his Talmidim, we know some of them from other, let's say, Rav Shlomo Alkabetz, and his brother-in-law, Rav Moshe Cordoviro, was a great Kabbalist of that time. These were students of Rav Yosef Karo. So Rav Yosef Karo now is living in Tzfat. He is publishing his Beis Yosef, then he goes on to write the Shulchan Aruch and the Kesef Mishnah. He dies in 1575 on the 13th day of Nisan. Now, in the intervening years, which we don't have time to talk about today, but it's very interesting, who was there in Tzfat when he got there? Mari Bei Rav. Rabbi Yitzchak Bei Rav. And before Mari Bei Rav dies, he institutes, it's a much longer story, but I'll just make a comment about it. I'll regalachas, just so you should be aware. Mari Bei Rav institutes a Sanhedrin. He decides he's going to reconvene the Sanhedrin and reintroduce the concept of smicha. Now, smicha is a halachic principle that was transmitted from Moshe Rabbeinu to Yehoshua and from Yehoshua to his students all the way down until the period of the Mishnah and the Roman persecutions. The Gemara says in the beginning of Bava Basra that smicha evaporated because of Roman persecutions, and the principle of smicha, it no longer exists. It only can be conferred, Ishmi Pi Ishma Moshe Rabbeinu, in the context of, you see in the beginning of Sanhedrin, the context of the Chachmei HaMasorah. And at a certain point, after the period of Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, there was no longer any smicha, which is why if you look in the Gemara, you'll see certain rabbis are referred to as Rabbi so-and-so, and some are referred to as Rav so-and-so. If you had Rabbi before your first name, that means you had smicha. If you did not have Rabbi before your name, you did not have smicha. Rav, one of the most important rabbinic authorities from the Rav had smicha. His counterpart, who was always arguing with Rav, right, Shmuel never got smicha. The Gemara describes it never worked out. Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi was out of the office one day, and then they didn't have the smicha students. I don't know, whatever. They didn't. They couldn't work it out. So Shmuel went to, and they never gave smicha outside of Israel. So Shmuel went to Bavel and never got smicha. So how do you reintroduce smicha? So one question is it even possible to reintroduce smicha? And if it is, how are you going to do that? So the Mari Bei Rav decides he's going to reintroduce smicha, and he gives smicha to a group of Talmidim, one of whom was Rav Yosef Karo in 1538. So that was a short-lived experiment. If you don't, If you don't know, a couple of years ago, I don't know how many years ago already, maybe 10, 15 years ago, there were some rumblings in Israel. There were people who wanted to talk about being Mechadish the Smicha again today, which is a complicated story, as you can imagine. But this was a debate between the Ma'arib Rav and the Ma'arab Ibn Chaviv, who was living in Yerushalayim that time, who opposed the Chiddush HaSmicha. So Rav Yosef Karo is recognized, and then in the early 1540s, when Ma'arib Rav dies in Tzfat, Rav Yosef Karo is recognized as the senior Torah Gadol of the generation living in Tzfat. So people are sending him shilas from all over the world. He's getting into interesting machlokasim with other rabbanim. One of them is, there's a big discussion about selling land in Israel during Shemitah called the Heter Mechira. Well, if you sell land, does that remove the Kedusha? So it's a big machlokas. One of the common interlocutors of the Avkas Rochel, of the Beis Yosef, was the Maharit. And they go back and forth on this and many other issues. So this is the world that Rav Yosef Karo is living in. And in 1242, he finishes the Beis Yosef and he publishes it. He publishes it and it is published in 1555. So now we open up the introduction to the Beis Yosef and we realize that this, first of all, is coming at a crucial time because this is going to set up the Shulchan Aruch, which is going to change the world of halacha forever. But this is playing a very interesting, fascinating role in how the halacha is going to develop and how it affects us on an everyday basis. So let's start with page one. Any questions, comments, or observations so far? Everybody still awake? We're still here. Okay, let's start on page one. So here's the Beis Yosef's introduction. So first he has to explain why this Sefer is important right now, because everybody writes a Sefer for a reason. We're going to get to the big reason why he writes a Sefer, but he wants to get to the immediate. So he starts on line one, on page one. He says, Baruch Hashem, that God created his world, letachlis ha'adam, which we started the whole discussion today with, that our goal is to get closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Umikol min ha'adam bachalo am segula Yaakov chevel nachalaso. And he chose the Jewish people. And line number two, Umeirov ahavaso la'am karovo, out of the abundance of love for his people. Kervonol fnehar Sinai. It's such an important way to introduce Beis Yosef. Because if a person approaches the world of halacha feeling that the halacha is an oppressive set of isurim miloshon le'esor, to tie down, so they're not going to really have the right perspective on life. We have to understand that the halacha, that the life that we are given, the strictures, the regulations, are a gift. We are the Ribbono Shel Olam's children. And you know what children need? Children need limits. They need love and they need limits. All right, I'm paraphrasing Dr. Palkovitz's book. I can't help it. Love and limits. That's what children need. It's obvious. Children need love and limits. It's not all limits. It's not all love. We need both. And that is what the system of halacha is about. And if a person views it in this way, we can understand how it adds a tremendous amount of meaning to our lives. If a person views it as God is some kind, I don't even understand how this would work. I would not want to worship a God who is always looking out to get people. Like, that's not a God. I wouldn't like that God at all. It sounds horrible. And all the fun things is to do is to see how to make people's lives stand on their heads. It's terrible. That's a horrible God. I wouldn't want that God at all. That's why Rav Kook has an essay where he talks about how there's something very important about atheists. Atheists are very important. Because the God that atheists don't believe in, we don't believe in either. Right? That God we don't believe in. So when you start a halachic discussion, it's got to be noveh from the fact that the gift at Har Sinai was a gift. Now, children don't always appreciate the rules that we give them. Sometimes they resist them. Sometimes they think they know better. Eventually, those children, usually as they get older, and then sometimes when they have their own children, and I can tell you that my father is for sure chuckling a lot by what I'm dealing with my own adolescent son. What goes around comes around.
Yeah.
So, you know, now you realize that maybe the punk that you were, you weren't as smart as you thought you were. You know? So we also, you know, we go through periods in our life where we look at this in different ways. But he's saying it's because the Rebbeinu Shalom lived, loves us. V'hinchilanu al yedei mivchar mina enoshi Moshe Rabbeinu. He gave us Torah u'mitzvahs, line number, it's four, but it should be five, four. Letov lanu l'man nelech bedrachav nimtzachein be'enav, line number five. So we should follow in a godly path. It's for our benefit. It's not lahara, it's lahitiv, like the Medrash says. Vayehi, so here's the problem. And remember, thinking back to his own experience, when he was 9 years old, Vayehi ki orchol lanu hayamim hurku hurkanu mikli el kli. This is a halachic expression. We were thrown, emptied from one vessel to another. What does he mean by that? We were thrown from one cup to another cup.
One country to another?
That's right. He's saying, look, it's a halachic expression. We were thrown from one country. Meaning we're expelled. I had this in my own life, says Rav Yosef Karo. We're thrown from one place to another. Ubagolo halachnu v'kama tzaros ruos tkufos. How many successive miserable experiences we had. Bo aleinu and ki niskayim banu b'avosenu v'avda chachmas chachamav, and that diminished our wisdom, and the learning of Torah was diminished. So therefore, he says we have a problem. Look at line number seven. Ki lo nases haTorah kebeis toros. The Gemara has in Yevamos an expression that there's something called losis godadu. Don't create factions among Jews. That's a din. What are you going to tell them? I don't know. It's what it is. Losis godadu. Don't create agudas agudas. So why? So one reason the Gemara says is shelo yasa Torah kishtei Torahs. Should look like two Torahs. These people do like this and these people do like that. It's not right. So the Beis Yosef says, you know, today, it's not Kishtei Toros. Rather, Kitoros ain't Misfar. There are innumerable Torahs today. Because people are living in all different places, and everybody writes their own tradition, what's Nogea to them, what they know. But people are all over the place. There's no central, unified experience, which is, by the way, one of the incredible gifts the Rebbeinu Shlom is giving the Jewish people, Bismaneinu Anu, in the land of Israel, that this experience is starting to be unraveled, because there are Jews from all different kinds of backgrounds and all different edot, with all different minhagim, all different traditions, and they all come and they're in Israel together. And so now people are starting to navigate how to live together, not with a million Torahs, not with Shtei Torahs, with one Torah, at the same time reflecting everybody's tradition. So it's an interesting kibbutz golios, the ikfas and the mashicha that we're living in. He says, why? Because we have so many, line number eight, rov sfarim, there's so many books, hanim tzorim b'bir mishpatev adinel. Now, he says, it's a good thing, v'gam ki heim aleim ha-shalom kavanasim ha'isa lahayir. Their intent of writing all these different in books was, yes, it was meant to enlighten us, but you know what it left with us? You know what we call that? A big balagan. I don't know what to make of this, he says. You have tons of svarim, and nobody knows what's the bottom line. What am I supposed to do? He says, not only that, on line number 10, there's a duplication of resources here. The kofil mashakvar kosav. So then you have a recapitulation of something that somebody already wrote in a previous sefer. So not only do you have so many svarim, you also have a duplication of svarim, and then you have conflicting opinions. So we gotta figure this out. He says, we need some seder here. But we need to do that in a context. The halacha is not manufactured out of thin air. It's a development. It's a process. It starts in the Gemara, which is the synthesis of the written Torah and the oral Torah. And you develop it from the Gemara to the Rishonim to how the conclusion of the sugya goes. So someone has to do that. So go to line number 14. He says, V'im yomar adam, if a person is going to say, she yitzdarech, every person, each one of us, we're going to go home, lachkor shorsho, we're going to go search out the root of every halacha in our life. V'lim tzumoto b'divrei ha-gemara, and in the mefarshim, in the poskim, yichbar olav, line 15, ha-davar ha-olav mod. It's not shayach. You're going to go home, you're going to say, you know, I don't know what bracha to say on lunch today. You know what we need to do? We need to learn Maseches Brachos right now. You're going to be very hungry. By the time you get to lunch, it's going to be... I was going to say at least 3 years later. By the time you finish Brachos with all the Rambams and all the Riffs and the Chut, the Mishol, everything. It's not Shayach. You're going to go figure out every din, every Gemara is just totally impossible. But at the same time, you can't just write a Kitzer Sefer where you don't tell anybody what the din, what the origin of this din and what the source is or what the other opinions are. You got to bring it all together. What is the Chiddush of the Beis Yosef? Why is it so revolutionary? Because he brings it all together. Yeah.
This is around the time of the printing press, isn't it?
Yes.
So that would also make things more accessible. When the tour or previous ones have been done, it's a manuscript. A lot of people aren't going to get it, and it's going thousands of miles or hundreds of miles. So it's also very fortunate if he's doing this around the time of the printing press, even though that would have been expensive. At least the community would be able to have one book or something like that. It'd be a lot... dissemination would be a lot easier.
So it's interesting. I don't know. Obviously, on some level, of course, the dissemination is easier with the printing press. But the truth is, the Rambam's work got around. Everybody had a Rambam. Everybody had access to the Rambam. All the way from up in Chachmei Ashkenaz to Eretz Yisrael to Chachmei Sfarad. Everybody had the Rambam. It was copied by hand, but it became so essential that people had it. Now, I don't think that most people had a copy of the Rambam on their shelf like we do today, but in terms of people having access to that limud, it was Rav Yosef Karo does not say, we don't have the number of books. He says, we don't have the right books to help us for what we need right now. Maybe in previous generations, where people are living in good times, when there were no persecutions, for 5 minutes, then we could have a more cohesive, integrated halachic process. But he says, now everybody's all over the place. So it doesn't seem that it's from a dearth of manuscripts. As we mentioned, the tour had many manuscripts that were written and copied and disseminated. People, their job as sofrim was just to do that. There were people who just spent their lives as scribes, copying manuscripts by hand, from one to the next.
But what's the basic difference between the tour? Because he was also kind of doing that.
Yes.
And the Beis Yosef.
So good. That's what he's going to explain. Okay. So first he's telling you, let's get to what we have now. He says, thank God, line number 16, we have the Sefer of the Rav HaMagid and the Rabbeinu Yerucham. The Rabbeinu Yerucham is a 14th century Provençal Chacham who wrote a very important halacha Sefer. And they give you Hamorim Lanu Mekomos Hadinim B'Talmud. They give you the source in the Talmud. However, Hama'ayin Bahem on line 17, Yakir Chesrono Imlo Yelo Hekev Gorol B'Talmud. And Vigamu Mekobus Rabin Yachapis Vayimsa B'Devrayim Moramakom Lo Oso Adin. He says, the Rabbi Yerucham, it's not quite comprehensive enough. You have to be a Baki in Shas. And the Magid Mishnah, which is a commentary on the Rambam, he says, A Magid Mishnah Lios Hadinahu Shaloa Pikirsas Harambam Zal Oshitaso. In Rabbeinu Yerucham is mekatzert sometimes. He says, what we had until now, it's not adequate. Not only that, he says, if you look in the Rambam himself, the Rambam doesn't tell you any sources. It doesn't tell you where he got anything, which is part of the reason what's going to happen at the end of the life of the Beis Yosef. He's going to write a commentary on the Rambam to give you just that. The Kesef Mishnah, the purpose of the Kesef Mishnah is to explain to us where the Rambam got his halacha. Is it from the Bavli? Is it from Yerushalmi? Is it from a Sifra? Is it from a Tosefta? Where is it coming from? Because the Rambam doesn't tell you. So he's saying, what do we have until now? Oh. So he says, well, what about the Kitzer book? So the explanation to go back to the Gemaras is essential, but it's not fully treated yet in the Rabbeinu Yerucham and in the Magid Mishnah. What about the Kitzer books? So he says, go to line... the next paragraph, it says, to do it yourself is overwhelming. So go to line 30. Go to line 32. V'im Yomar, what about the Kitzer books, like the Smach and the Augur and the Kolbo? That's good. Shazu derech Kitzara, but it's va'aruka. Ki me'olam lo yucha ladas shum din kilchaso. You can't really know the halacha. If you're in a pinch, you want to know what the bracha is of a particular food. So you can go online, and you can find at the CRC website, you can find the OU website, the Star K, you can find out what the bracha is on this halach, on this food. That's good. But it doesn't mean you know Hilchos Brachos. Rav Shechter told us, and it's so true, and as I'm growing up, I'm seeing this more and more. Rav Shechter told us, we have to understand what is the source of every halacha. What's the nature of every halacha? He said, why? He says, because in life, things are not always so simple. Life's complicated. Life is messy. And so you often have conflicts. You have competing interests, competing halachic values. Well, how do you know how to navigate those? If all you have is a kitzur book that says, do this, this, and this, and don't do that, that, and that, well, we don't know from that kitzur book which is more serious and which is less serious. Rav Shechter always told us, he says, you have to know what's a din d'oraisa, and what's a din d'rabbanan, and what's a minig, and what's an old, it's like someone had recently a question from a practice. Someone said, well, it's a minig. Well, you have to know, what kind of minig is it? Is that a minig like our family has a minig to eat tacos before the Super Bowl?
Yeah.
Or a minig that appears in the Shulchan Aruch, that's an 800-year-old minig from every community from which you know, you have to know. So the Beis Yosef says, it's good to have a kitzur sefer, but a kitzur sefer doesn't really teach you the whole halacha. It just tells you what to do in a very, very narrow window. So he says, these svarim are important, but they're not enough. They're not enough to teach you how to live a full life, because we're going to be navigating all kinds of complications. So just to have a kitzur book is not sufficient. That's what he says here on line 32. And he also talks about the limitations that they have. Sometimes they only quote one din and not another din. So he says, Al Kain, line 40, Ani Hadal Ba'alfi, Yosef ben Mori v'Rabbi Harav Rav Ephraim ben Mori v'Rabbi ben Morin of Rabbeinu Harav Yosef Karo Zichrono Levracha L'Chai Olam Abba. He says, I'm going to stand up and I'm going to write a sefer, 41 in the middle, Lichtov Lechaber Sefer Kolol Kol Adinim HaNoagim B'Bir Shor Sheim U'Motzeim HaGemara. I'm going to give you the halacha with all of the roots from the Gemara. And then, Im Kol Chilukei Sfaros HaPoskim Ish Lo Nedar. And I'm going to give you all the explanations with all the poskim. Because the tour, it just gives you, yes, he gives you some sources. He'll say, this halacha is based on the Rosh, or this halacha is based on the Rambam, or this is based on the Rif, or Rabbeinu Hananel. But he doesn't give you the whole development. You can't learn the tour and know what the sugya says. So he says, but, line 42 at the end, V'lo ra'isi lasu sefer zechibra b'fnei atzmo. I did not want to write this as an independent sefer. Why not? I don't want to repeat what was already written before me. The Torah did a great job. He organized the halachos. So now you want to know where is Hilchos Brachos? You know, you look in Or HaChaim, you'll find it. And then the Beis Yosef, by the way, does more organization within this Zimun of the Torah. He says, you know where to look for the laws of, because someone asks you, let's say you're marrying off a child. Go look, where are you going to go? Learn all of Hilchos Kedusha, you're going to learn all of Maseches Kedusha, you're going to learn all of Maseches Ksubis. No, you open Evan Ezer. What's going to happen at a wedding? You learn the Simonim in Evan Ezer. He organized it. So he says, I don't have to recreate the wheel. It's great. So he says, first thing, I had an idea. You know, where should I put this book? So my first thought, he says, I was going to put it on the Rambam. Last line. Ola b'dayti l'samcho l'sefer ha-Rambam, because li'oso ha-posek ha-yoser mefursam ba'olam. He is the most mefursam to k'posek. And not only that, as Professor Isidore Twersky, Rav Yitzchak Asher Twersky, points out in a beautiful article called Harav Rabbi Yosef Karo Bala Shulchan Aruch, he points out that, and it's, he doesn't need my askama, but in the small, puny amount of learning that I've done, I've noticed that it's very common, that's what he's pointing out, that the Shulchan Aruch, in his formulation, in his language, oftentimes strictly follows the language of the Rambam. The Rambam has a huge outsized influence on Rav Yosef Karo. So he says, I thought I should write it on the Rambam. The problem is, he says, I don't think so. You know why? Because the Rambam only brings one shita. In the Rambam's world, not in a denigrating way, in the Rambam's world, it's his way or the highway. There are very few times that the Rambam says, oh, there's also another... The Rambam, because the Rambam is trying to tell you how to live. Remember, in the Hakdama of the Rambam, he says, all you need are two things, a Tanakh and my book, and you're set. So you can't sit figuring out all the... Rambam's got to tell you one opinion. So he says, I'm not going to do that because I want to be able to bring everybody. So what am I going to do? So line number two, L'chein iskamti l'somcho, rather I'm going to put it attached to the Sefer Arba Turim that Shechi Be'arav Rabbeinu Yaakov ben Rosh Zal ki hu kolel rov deos haposkim. This is to your point, Jeff. The tour quotes most of the shitas in the poskim, but it's truncated. So I'm going to take the tour and I'm going to embellish it. I'm going to give you the source in the Gemara. I'll give you, maybe there's a Yerushalmi on this topic. I'll give you the Rambam and explain it in further. Yeah.
So why didn't you get an appendix and not just hypertext like everybody else knows around?
Well, that is what it is. When I say appendix, I mean it's a running commentary.
Oh, okay.
It's on the side. So the tour, let's say if you open today the Machon Yerushalayim tour, the nice edition of the tour, so you'll see in the middle is the tour. I should have probably printed it for you. In the middle is the tour. And then on the inside margin, because he was older, earlier commentary, is the Beis Yosef. And on the outside margin is from Rav Yoel Sirkis, the Bach, who is a Polish Ashkenazi commentary on the tour that comes later. So as you, when you learn tour Beis Yosef, it's page by page, one section at a time. The Torah is three lines. The Beis Yosef is man-eating. It's huge. Much, much bigger.
Does he just give his commentary, like sources, or does he argue with the Torah?
So on occasion, he will ask on the Torah. A lot of times he's trying to figure out, where did the Torah get this halacha from? Does that reflect the majority opinion? Because he's going to have his own psak. It's going to have to come down l'maisa in the Shulchan Aruch, and not every Shulchan Aruch agrees with the Torah. And he's going to explain that in a minute. So he says, you know what I'm going to do? Line number four. V'zeh mishpat ha-sefer. Oh, I'm running out of time as always. V'zeh mishpat ha-sefer ma'aseyu, where I'm going to give you levayer hadin shekasa balaturim. I'm going to explain the law that the balaturim gave you. Is it a mishnah, a brisa, tosefta, gemara, yushalmi, etc.? And if he brings, line number seven, other opinions, sometimes he forgets those other opinions. Maybe the Rambam has a very important opinion and the Rif and the Torah doesn't quote it. Well, I'm going to quote it for you because you have to know the Rambam's opinion on this and this topic. And therefore, what's going to be the result? Line 16, Nimtza, turns out, you will have, if you have this Sefer Beis Yosef in front of you, you will have organized the Gemara with Rashi, Tosfos, the Ran, the Rif, the Rosh, Mordechai, Rambam, Hagos, Magid Mishnah, Rabbeinu Yerucham, Sefer HaTrumah, Shibolei Aleket, Rokech, Sharidur, Tashbetz, Iter, Nemuk Yosef, Smag, Orchas Chaim, Torah Sabayis, etc. All right?
This is fairly bright.
You got it. Now you see why it took 20 years. But this is, it's transformational. This is everything from, everything that is this Kultura Kula, from Lamais until now, including the Chachmei Ashkenaz and the Chachmei Sfarad. This is a monumental work that many argue, from the time of the Rambam until the time of the Beis Yosef, no work of this magnitude had been created. This is massive. And it's revolutionary, because now you have all of it in one place. And that's what he's going to explain in the next paragraph, line 23. He says, you should know, I'm not going to give you every single time the same opinion that you'll find in Mordechai and Hagos Maimoni. These are all Ashkenaz Chachamim. He says, they all say the same thing. I'm just going to give you one. You check the Mordechai, you'll find the same thing in the Smag. I'm not going to have to repeat the same things every time. But when you learn the Beis Yosef, which is very extensive, but you start to see there's a picture. He's filling out the picture. So these Rishonim are now all collated in and winnowed down and explained. Sometimes he'll have a Rambam. He'll say the Rambam's opinion is like this, but it's hard to understand. So he'll have to explain it. And you know what's going to happen, interestingly? We see this now. We just came across a very difficult Rambam in Hilchos Mikvos that we're learning in the Kol in the afternoon. So this Rambam is explained in two places. It's explained by the Beis Yosef and explained later where? In the Kesef Mishnah. He's going to take the same explanation he gave in his commentary on the Torah and explain it right there on the Rambam on the spot. Because as he's learning these Rambams to explain the Shitas, he has to explain it. It's difficult sometimes. Ah, So he acknowledges there were some earlier commentaries on the Torah. That's in paragraph line number 30. You should know, what about the Ma'ari Abuav and the Ma'ari Beirav? Excuse me. Yes, the Ma'ari Beirav, Rabbi Yaakov ibn Chabiv. And he says, I'm going to quote them as part of my explanation, because I'm not the first person to write a commentary on the Torah. There were others who came before me. So now the question is, okay, remember, the goal of this is to have everything in one place and have a practical conclusion. Well, if the Beis Yosef just gave you everything, including the kitchen sink, so what do you do now? He says, I'll give you the rule. He says, who am I? He says, I'm just a student. But we have a principle in halacha that we follow the rov, the majority. The majority of what? So he says, I'm going to identify the three, in his view, most fundamental rishonim who paskin, who rule in every area of halacha. Who are they? He says, our goal, line 36, is we should have Torah achas u'mishpat echad. We should have one psak. And if we go back and forth with the Ramban and the Rashba and the Rayas, we could be here all day. So you know what we'd need to do? Go to line 43. Hiskamti bedati lios shloshis amudi ha-hora'a. I'm going to give you the three pillars of psak, asher beis, habay, asher beis, yisrael, nishan aleim, boroseim, that they rule in halacha and everybody looks to them. They are, 44, the Rif, the Rambam, and the Rosh. Amarti alibi, I said to myself, shebamakom shishnayim mehem, go to line 45, in a case where two of them agree with one opinion, maskim ladas achas, nifsok halacha kemosam, except if there is an unusual circumstance where most people don't follow that view. He says, most people don't follow that view, we're not going to follow that view. But generally, he says, we're going to follow two out of three. And then, what happens if you don't have a majority? Line 47, Makom she'echad min ha'gimel, one of the three, doesn't lo gila daito bedina, who didn't say what he thinks, v'shnei amudim anisharim cholkim, then we have the Ramban, the Rashba, the Ran, the Mordechai, the Smag. Each case, we're going to check and figure out what to do. What about a case where they didn't say anything? Top of the next column. Let's say they didn't tell you what to do at all. Hamakom she'lo gila daito shum echad mehem, none of them paskin, not the Rif, who wrote the concise version of all the halachos, not the Rambam, who wrote a comprehensive codex, not the Rush, who wrote a commentary of halachos based on the Rif. He says, then, we're going to follow Kedivrei Chachamim Hamufursamim, the famous Chachamim who wrote, whoever that is in that particular topic. And it happens to be, let's say, you live in a particular place, or have a tradition, line number 3, Noag Ktsas, Isser B'Ktsas Devarim. If you have a particular place where you come from and this tradition is your family tradition in your community and you don't follow what we say, keep your minig. You have particular masora, you follow your masora. But we're just telling you, you know, the way that we're going to calibrate all of this is based on the Shlosha Amudei Hora.
Yeah, the people that he's bringing in are not necessarily Sephardim, right?
Wow, so that's what I was just going to say. Perfect. So now let's fast forward. One of the greatest, most influential chacham of our generation was the late Gaon Rav Ovadia Yosef, Zichron Levracha. Rav Ovadia was an exceptionally towering Talmudic and halachic giant. I mean, it's impossible to measure the giantness, the hugeness, the overwhelming greatness of Rav Ovadia. Rav Ovadia's main mission in life, you could argue, is what we call lahachzir atara liyoshna, to return the glory to its heyday. And what did he mean by that? He meant that since the 16th century, many different sfarim and many different chachamim have written and all different kinds of things. But he says, the bottom line is, we have to go back to the glory days. And who is Maran? The Rosh Shulchan Aruch, the Beis Yosef in the Sephardic community is only referred to as Maran, our rabbi. As he would say, as it says in the last paragraph here, which Rav Ovadia would paraphrase, the pasuk says that when you needed something in Egypt, where did you go? Lechu el Yosef. You want to know what to do? You need to look to the Beis Yosef. So even though there were many other poskim, Sephardic poskim, over the last 400 or 500 years, Rav Ovadia's major push was to almost always paskin like Maran. He says, that is our psak. So why is it that Sephardic psak and Maran are going together? Because if you look at these three names, the Rif, Rav Yitzchak Alfasi from Morocco, the Rambam, and the Rush. Well, which of these three is different than the other two? The Rush, Rabbeinu Asher ben Yechiel, is the only one who's going to record the opinions of the Balei HaTosfos. The Rif lived before the Balei HaTosfos, and the Rambam never had access to the learning of the Balei HaTosfos. So almost invariably, the Beis Yosef and the Shulchan Aruch are going to be tilted toward their bent of their Masorah is going to be Sephardic tradition. Now we understand everything. Rav Ovadia, who was the greatest chacham of all the chachmei Sfarad, I mean, there were other great, Rav Mordechai Eliyahu and others, and many others, but Rav Ovadia, his influence was so outsized, his insistence on going back to Maran, but it's not just Rav Ovadia, it's all the chachmei Sfarad over the generations, they're rooted in this one figure, Rav Yosef Karo. It's from this one decision. It's because when he said, we have to come up with one psak, and there has to be one hachra, this was how he framed it. And so that's what he says in the end. He says, Nimtza sefer ze mazon lekulabei. The goal of this sefer is to nourish all of us. Meaning, you get the psak halacha, you get the conclusion, but you get the source of it. You get the development of the halacha. You appreciate what it means and where it comes from. Al kein karasiv beis Yosef. I called it, therefore, Beis Yosef. Ki kashem shemi Beis Yosef, just like in the house of Yosef in Mitzrayim, hayo nizonim hakol mosan haguf, everybody was sustained and nourished physically. Kach yu nizonim misefer zem mosan hanefesh. We're going to be nourished spiritually, soulfully. We are going to be nourished from this sefer, because we'll have everything. We won't just have a kitzer book, we'll have the source, we'll have the development of the halacha, we'll have the viewpoints across the spectrum, and then we'll come to a conclusion, which he's going to summarize in the cliff notes in the Shulchan Aruch. And informally, and conclusion, he says, Va'otam sheni, ki ze chelki mikol amali. He says, this is my life's work, says Rav Yosef Karo. It's all here. I laid it all out for you. V'hu beisi, this is my house. Ba'olam hazeh, uba'olam haba. And he concludes with a prayer that Hashem should help him, that he shouldn't have mistakes, and that God should give him the chen, the grace that this sefer should be a success. And a success, you could just imagine what it is. Because now we go back to the beginning, we think about how to live a proper Jewish life, to stay connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's the Beis Yosef that encapsulated everything, that presents the multiple opinions, which lays it out for the Shlosh Amudei Horah, to then follow for the practical Psak and Shulchan Aruch. That is the origin of the way that people are going to follow today. So then comes the Ramah, Rav Moshe Isserles, and he writes the glosses for Ashkenazim. But if you think about one sefer from the Rambam until today that creates this halachic transformation, it's definitely going to be the Beis Yosef.
But the Ramah is just these little short little things. Has there been more of a Ashkenaz person?
No, because
been an Ashkenaz person has done.
So there was a Lavush. The Ramah originally wanted the Shulchan Aruch, which, as we pointed out, is just the compendium, the shorthand version of this. Shulchan Aruch was written and published at the same time that Rav Mordechai Yaffe, the Lavush, wanted to write his own Shulchan Aruch, and the Ramah wanted to write his own Shulchan Aruch. But they were beaten to the punch by the Beis Yosef. So then there was no point in the Rambam writing a whole nother Shulchan Aruch, so he just put his glosses. But originally, he and the Lavush writes his own quasi kind of Shulchan Aruch. But the Lavush is not so popular to study, and the Rambam says, you know what, if you can't beat him, join him. You know, so that's how it ended up, that the Ashkenazim just have the tag along. But
it seems like with all that, the Ashkenazim still... It's still the dominant.
Well, I guess it depends who you ask. If you ask Rav Ovadia, he would say, L'achzir atara l'yoshna. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
You know, we have Sephardic pride, Rav Ovadia would say. Yeah. So, depends where you are. But the idea that this chibur of the Beis Yosef shaped the world that we live is really important, because sometimes we think about it that it's all the Shulchan Aruch. It's not. The Shulchan Aruch is just the conclusion. It's just the summary of his whole work that was the Beis Yosef. I hope you have a great week. Shkoyach.